Welcome back. This one's going to be a doozy. We've been preparing, and I'm excited because I've got a lot to talk about today.
Hello, in character listeners. Let's play the theme song here.
Woo! You know, the sad thing is that's probably just going to be the theme song because we're never going to get around to actually making a theme song.
Yeah, welcome listeners to part two of Walter White's character exploration through music, of course. We are feeling a little stressed with school at the moment. A lot of is on the go, so if we come across ill prepared at all, that is why.
This is just a moment of being transparent and genuine, you know. Just like you all, we're human, you know? Like,
or just trying to rid myself of any responsibility for how stupid I sound over the next hour. So, anyway, Evan, you edited the last episode. Where exactly did we leave off?
End
of season three? So, okay. So at the end of season three, that's the episode Full Measure where Jesse pulls the gun on Gale and Gale.
I don't think we...
Gale
did dies. We talk about that?
I think we touched upon that as an idea.
Gale's dead. Spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically the end of season three, the main thing and the kind of catalyst for everything that happens after this is Gus's death, or not Gus's death, pardon me, Gale's death, and what this means for Walt and Jesse. And so we see Walt at the beginning of this season really... like, what am I supposed to do now? Like, he knows he's kind of in this really, really precarious position. I'm really repeating myself here. We could have probably cut a minute and a half out of this, but anyway. So,
no, it's like if Gus wanted him gone before, the fact that he was willing to kill his secondhand man, someone he put so much time into, now Gus really hates him. Like, the relations between the two of them are so, they're just non-existent, right, at this point.
And we're developing at some point in the beginning of this season is where Gus makes his threats of, you know, I will kill your wife, I will kill your son, I'll kill your infant daughter, that whole threat in the desert. And so Walt, early in this season, tries to get Mike's help, I believe, to kill Gus. Does that sound right to you? yeah. No, that helps.
You know, I wouldn't put it past.
No, that. No, that happens. Okay, so we're at this stage where Walt is like, yeah, you gotta help me out. Meanwhile, Hank and the DEA and all these people are looking into Gale's death. And this is where things kind of get set in motion in terms of, like, them kind of being more on Heisenberg's tracks than they have been at this point. Although, right now, the DEA thinks that Gale was Heisenberg and has just been cut off from living, the land of the living. So, but...
Oh, yeah, and that's where we get this, the infamous interaction between Hank and Walter, where he's like, oh, I don't think your Heisenberg is gone.
Yeah.
He's still out there.
It's like, yeah.
Iconic.
Very,
moment.
Very iconic little dinner conversation with a horrified Skylar watching on. Obviously, she knows that Walt is, you know.
I think she secretly liked it because that was a moment of him being, you know, an assertive. Okay, so is this all preface to a specific song, or are we just...
I'm trying to get myself up to date right now. just where the heck we are. But this is important in terms of,
right,
what is the big moment of this season, which ultimately is the assassination, or whatever you want to call it, of Gus Fring, which is where this whole, right, season builds up to, starting from this, right, moment that happens at the end of season three. Yeah. So that this whole season is basically Walt maneuvering whatever way he can to take down Gus, because, you know, at this point it's either him or Gus.
And yeah, it's one of the
this
other.
All of this involves playing Jesse as in his little game, and in that using Brock as a little pawn. Uh-oh. In his chess game. So this is, you know, Walt at his most conniving and his most, I mean, probably most people would agree, one of, if not the most despicable thing that Walt does in the entire series, which is a pretty big statement. He does many despicable things, most of them from this point onward. Anyway, that's to say,
you know, I've been reading a book about Nazis, and even they hesitate to injure and kill children. But Mr. Heisenberg, he's ready to do it, you know?
Yes. You want to talk more about that?
I mean, I can.
No, it's fine. I mean, not even just this particular season, but Walt kind of in general, and I don't know how much of a perfect fit it is, but the song Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, that very famous song by Cage the Elephant, reminds me a lot of Walt's whole kind of philosophy at this point. So, you know, the ideas in the song, the narrator, whoever is discussing how he's having all these encounters with criminals, people that are doing some unsavory things, and he keeps asking them, like, why are you doing it? And basically, there ain't no rest for the wicked, money don't grow on trees, I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed, there ain't nothing in this world for free.
Hmm. Yeah, let's give a listen. Oh yeah, that's good stuff. I never fail to love the songs that we play here.
So fun and good.
Keep going. Yep.
Yeah.
I just wanted to listen to it real quick, but I'm ready to keep talking now.
Right. I mean, for me, it's this particular season where Walt is in terms of, I mean, the whole series is framed as like, it's either I do this or there's a really terrible consequence for my family, essentially, or at least that's the rationalization that he makes. But we're really getting into this wickedness of Walt at this stage. Like, I don't know how much Walt can justify his actions at this point. I don't know if he would still even try to. I mean, this is the whole season, I believe, of hold on, let me just fact check that before I actually say that.
Yeah, I mean, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, this is the season of I Am the Danger. So that's what I was going to say. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't a lie. Sorry, what were you going to say? I just cut you off.
Well, I mean, he surpassed the point of any justification based on supporting his family. It, at this point, it is solely just like the power that he can gain from it and prove to himself that he wasn't a failure, that he, like, the repeat of all of his issues in the lab with his colleague way back when, right?
Oh, like Gretchen and what's his name? It was like, I think they were just making, it's kind of, I don't think, really specified. It's something like that. It's like chemical patents of one kind or another. Anyway, so this is the season where we have this infamous dialogue, but mostly monologue, between Walt and Skyler, where Skyler realizes that Walt is kind of fearing for his life and the safety of his family because he'd just been kidnapped by Gus and brought out and threatened in the desert with that, you know, I'll kill your wife, kill your daughter, kill your son, kill your infant daughter whole speech. And then we get this, a guy opens his door and is killed, and you think that of me? No, I am the danger. I'm the one who knocks. Whole monologue. It's probably worth playing here, actually. It's
Do you know what would happen if I suddenly decided to stop going into work? A business big enough that it could be listed on the NASDAQ goes belly up. Disappears. It ceases to exist without me. No, you clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Oops, that was the BTM Gala advertisement. I played that by accident.
Yeah. So yeah, this is all to say that at this point, the ain't no rest for the wicked kind of philosophy, I think Walt is probably more readily able to adapt. This is probably the first time I think he's even recognizing that he isn't, he's in a lot of ways not the one having the gun pointed at him, but is the one holding the gun, or at least that's what he'd like to think. And so, you know, everything from this point out is, we gotta keep at it. Ain't no rest for the wicked, money don't grow on trees, you know, and probably... And this is where the money really becomes a very significant part of it for him, and more than I think he even realizes at the beginning, because initially in the show, he has this goal, I believe it's like $750,000, or it's something along those lines, of what he wants to make to leave his family with before he dies of lung cancer.
Right, he calculated it out, didn't he?
Yeah. And at this point, we get to... I'm pretty sure in this...
The 1.5 million quote from Jesse, is this around here or is that later?
Yeah, where we get this argument between him and Jesse, of Jesse being like, you know, you're going to be walking away with $5 million. I think this is in season 5, but the point still stands regardless.
Right.
You know, you're going to be walking away with $5 million. Him, Mike, and Jesse each get a piece of it, and Walt basically is... unable to accept that that's going to be his entire cut, because he knows the potential of what he could be making. And he's already in his life walked away or been cut out of getting as much money as humanly possible in his business with Gretchen. And I can't for the life of me remember that guy's name.
Wow. Just demonstrates truly how forgettable he is.
Elliot.
Yeah.
And, Money being a bigger motivator, I think he's coming to realize for him than he had initially, like self, really self-driven kind of desire for money, which also brings me to my next song, which I had a few options here of what could be chosen. I mean, there's a lot of songs about money and the pitfalls of money and this or that or whatever. I mean, I don't know that a song about the pitfalls of money would be very Walter White-esque, more probably from Jesse's perspective of watching Walter White.
Right.
So yep. I picked Money on My Mind by Lil Wayne. Again, because I feel like in these later seasons, Walter is like, has completely transformed, is unrecognizable from this guy that we had come to know in season 1 and even season 2, who's just trying to figure it out. He's got this braggadocious, arrogant kind of, you know, cock of the walk type thing about him that rappers also try to mm-hmm, put out into mm-hmm. the world. And this is a song I feel like kind of encapsulates that, and the title is pretty self-explanatory. I'll let it play here. So there it is.
Oops. Wait, it's still playing. Wait, don't talk to it. Okay, there we go. Got it.
Yeah, I mean,
well, yeah, we talked about that in the last episode, even the attraction he'd have to this grandiose, is that how you pronounce it? Grandiose? That sort
grandiose,
of mute,
yeah. Huh? Grandiose.
Yeah. I say it differently. Okay. Point being, that type of music associated with a certain type of people that he wouldn't traditionally even listen to, but because he relates to them in his power grab and search for just as much money as possible. He's like, oh, they're just like me for real. Right.
I also felt, I don't know, that I was trying to pick a money song, the one that's explicitly about money, and I also stumbled upon, well, this was actually the first one that I thought of was Money by Pink Floyd, which I think...
Good bass line.
I think... Sorry?
Has a good bass line.
Yeah. I think Walt would be more inclined to listen to, like, this is probably about his music taste. And I think it's a song that at this stage in his life, he would listen to totally unironically and, like, be like, yeah, you know. But this song is obviously an indictment of the endless pursuit of money at all costs. But the one line in particular is, money, it's a crime, share it fairly, but don't take a slice of my pie. Which I think is is probably the philosophy that Walt is at this point. Which, even in just previous seasons, Jesse is complaining in season 3 about, which we might have touched on in the last podcast, about how, you know, it's unfair because they did the math, like, Gus Fring is getting probably $90 million out of what they're producing, and each of them is getting $3 million. Jesse's like,
their slice is not
Jesse's like, it's economics, yo, or something like that. You know, classic Jesse line. And Walt is like, $3 million is more money than you have ever seen in your life. Like, you should be grateful. And it's funny just how the tables turn.
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't sound like him in season 5.
Exactly. So I thought those two were good examples. If we haven't given it a chance to play yet, here's my...
Ooh, good stuff. As I said earlier, that's a nice baseline.
Okay, well, next on, I don't think I used this in the last episode, but I'm hoping I didn't, because I initially had siphoned it off for this particular section of the show. As I said before, this is where the season ends with the iconic episode Face Off, which I believe is the last episode in season 4. And Face Off is kind of a funny name for anybody who has seen it. I hope you've already seen the show, or else this is quite the spoiler, but Gus Fring's face literally gets blown off, so that always makes me laugh. But also, it's a figurative face-off between Walt and Gus, and at this point, Walt has sneakily recruited Jesse to help him take down Gus Fring, although he didn't probably really even need him, but given how he ended up killing Gus, but that's aside the point. So the song that I chose here was Here Comes Revenge by Metallica, which, again, pretty self-explanatory title here.
Rock anthem.
We'll let it play. So, I mean, this song obviously is just about this need for revenge and enacting one's taking of it on their enemy. But there are just some lines here that I feel are perfectly adapted to Walt's situation. I mean, even the line "I was born in anger's flame" is interesting and poses an interesting question about Walt's nature. Was this something that was always sitting inside of him versus something that was unleashed by years of things just not going for him how they were supposed to? If you ask me, probably was always sitting inside of him in some respect. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, just because there are a lot of people out there who don't resort to the things that Walter White resorts to, no matter how crappy their lives.
He needed a catalyst for it, but
and you know what, Walter, people have it worse than you do, and they don't start, you know, selling drugs. So anyway, but burn your kingdom to the ground. I mean, I don't think there is a more apt way to describe this empire that Gus, I mean, it is an empire. It's a kingdom that Gus Fring has built. I mean, literally, just the infrastructure that's in place is that Gus puts there. And especially if you've seen Better Call Saul, which Evan is still working his way through. But if you're...
Oh, yeah, the significance of this kingdom building, how much time and effort and strategy went into making what it is by the time...
It's incredible. It's incredible, and it's even more incredible that one man alone was able to undo it all in the span of a year or whatever point we're at now. Not even a year at this point. Like 8 months. That's crazy, dude. So that's a good one. And then man has made me oh so strong, blurring lines of right and wrong, far too late for frail amends. Now it's come to sweet revenge. So... You know, even
this is the type of music, you know, why my parents probably wouldn't let me listen to this when I was young. Girls say that much. this is not good music. This is bad stuff.
Well, my dad doesn't like Metallica.
Bad people listen to it. That's what I say. So good choice.
Thank you. Yeah. See, Walter White, Metallica listener. Bad
problem.
Bad person. I can't say that. My uncle loves Metallica, so. I can't say that. Well, I guess I can say it, and I just did, but whatever. Yeah, but that's... Do you have any thoughts on that, other than that you weren't allowed to listen to that song as a child?
Well, I wasn't necessarily not allowed to listen to it. I know for a fact that we didn't like the song Highway to Hell by AC/DC, but I feel like this has similar... Well, it does feel like the song... Would you say the song is glorifying revenge, right?
I would say so, yeah, probably. And
right.
That even in of itself... I mean, many people around the world, I'm sure, when Breaking Bad was first airing and watched this episode, were like, oh, that's so sick. Look what Walt did. Oh my God, what a cool guy. Like, I don't think anyone was sitting there like... on Gus Fring's side. I was probably a lot more conflicted about it than the average person. I mean, as much as you want Walt to win because you want the show to go on.
I mean, when you're comparing Walt to Gus, you're more empathetic to Walt.
Absolutely,
when you compare Walt to like the rest of the world, then you're like, I didn't feel much confliction between, I'm curious where your confliction came from in this context.
Well, the means by which he kills him is,
oh, I guess it's all poetic, like yeah, very revenge-oriented versus practical.
I mean, even the long-standing feud between Gus Fring and the Salamancas is how Gus is taken down. I mean, that is his one weakness, is over anything else, his one blind spot.
Wait, so pause. Do you think that the way, like, it seemed like that was it was of necessity that he was killed that way?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, he had to use...
Well, my conflict is twofold. One, Walt's reasons are no holier than Gus's in terms of killing or not killing or whatever he's doing. I mean, but I don't have sympathy for Gus in that respect. My conflict comes mostly from Walt killing Gus by any means necessary, which... Two problematic things occur over everything else is he manipulates Jesse by using Brock as a pawn and nearly like killing this kid with poison. Although he claims that, oh, you know, like you think I wouldn't give him the correct amount? Like I measured it out exactly. Like he wasn't going to die from that. Anyway, whatever justification he wants to use is aside the point. And then, I mean, he blew up a nursing home. I mean, this all happened in a nursing home. Like, literally, Hector Salamanca exploded his, wheelchair. Like, the entire room blew up. Like, there were people in the next room, I'm sure. Like, just, like, innocent elders. So, but that was the only way Walt was going to get it done. But does that justify... My God, the means at which he did it? I don't think so, but I mean, you know,
right.
those are just things that, I mean, the poisoning of Brock is something that I think probably conflicted people, but most people probably wouldn't have even thought twice about the nursing home. And it actually wasn't until later when, somebody's talking about it. I think Hank is talking about it. And it's like, you blew up a nursing home. Like, you blew up a nurse. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, he did. Like, that's crazy.
He did. There's so many things on your mind at that moment. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, like, when you pin it in such a way that it's me or him, I have to kill him or he's going to kill me. That's not even a fair equivalence anyways, because there is the potential for, like, Walt to truly just take his money and run. Like, if he really didn't want to get his hands dirty, he could leave the country, and he even has Saul as a contact who can help him get out. But he wants the domination of the industry. He doesn't want that competitor. He's still ready to stick it out for the long haul.
So. Right, yeah. Although I will say that brings us to the episode, also infamous episode. This season is just filled with, like, incredible episodes. The episode Crawl Space, where he ends up...
Oh, that's terrifying.
Terrifying. Where he is like, where's the money, Skylar? And Skylar is like, I gave it to Ted. So they don't actually have any money at that point in the show. Before Gus dies, she literally gave it all to Ted. But again, I don't blame Skylar. I don't want to go too off on a tangent. She was completely unaware of the danger that Walt was in. And she was under the impression that things were moving like clockwork and they were just going to make it back. And that it was for the necessity of the continuation of things moving on as such that she had to do what she did and give Ted the money. Obviously, hindsight is 2020, but...
So he didn't actually have a way out. He felt like he had to kill Gus.
Well, he'd been trying to kill Gus all season. That was kind of, I think, the entire... what was happening all season, but that was the moment where I think he realized that... Like, he really had absolutely no way out whatsoever. Because I think what he was trying to do at that point was the disappearing man, you know, that Saul Goodman ended up using.
He wanted to take advantage of that.
Right. He was trying to get the whole family out and, like, disappear the whole family. Like, him and Skylar and Walt Jr. And
Right, and he couldn't.
And he couldn't because they didn't have any money.
But this... Crawl Space happens after the... assassination?
No. Crawl Space happens after, I think, Gus Fring kidnaps them, but before, or after Gus Fring kidnaps him and puts and takes him in the desert and threatens him.
Right, that wouldn't even make sense. Yeah, of course,
the assassination. So, but the whole, like, I am the danger happens, like, right at the beginning of season four, like, where Skylar's like, well, like.
So what should he have done then? I guess is, I mean. He does validly think that he needs to get rid of Gus.
Yeah, I'm not refuting that. Like, I don't.
No, I know. It makes my case against.
I mean, the question stands throughout the whole show is like, did he ever need to do any of this? Like, no, he didn't. None of this needed to happen. Right. This was his ego and his pride and other factors, obviously, other than his family, that were driving him towards. This as his ultimate demise to begin with. I mean, live by the sword, die by the sword, as they say. So that's my two cents on that.
And he really did die from a meth overdose when you think about it, so.
Not in any way, but, you know. Expand on that. I actually have no idea what you're talking about.
No, I'm just saying things in such a way to, like, throw you off, hopefully, and I think it worked, but, you know, the way that connects to the show more broadly is that he dies.
Right. But before we get there, we have a whole other season to unpack. We have all of season 5 to get through. By the way, do you have any songs at this for this stage of the show to discuss?
That's a. You shouldn't have asked that. What are you trying to do here?
No.
I mean, maybe a fair question. If for whatever reason, I maybe felt like I. Well, this is all going to get cut probably, but, like, I don't know. For whatever. I can't even conceptualize what's going on. I mean, we just did a decent job of recapping, but, like. The ability to connect what's going on to songs requires context. Right, right. And I hadn't had any context until this very second. Oops. Nope.
Well, let's move on then to season 5. Although not all of this is going to be totally linear. We've kind of gone back and forth a few times.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But so season 5. So season 5 is quite the doozy, and I remember watching it the first time, and the season opens on Walt like a year or something in the future. Like, you can tell it's like clearly in the future, and he's at the diner, and
whoa.
He meets with this guy who gives him a key to a car in exchange for money, and then Walt leaves the restaurant, and we see that he's just bought a machine gun. It's in the trunk, and you're like, but at this point, obviously, you don't know what the heck has happened in season 5.
Is that the same machine gun that's used at the end of the show?
I think so. Actually, I don't really remember. I remember there being a weapon in the... I think so. I think that's...
That's wild.
Because at this point, he's going back, but... and he's... Yeah, no, it must be, because that's the only gun he has. And this is his final mission, which we don't know yet. We don't know what the heck is going on, and the final episodes of the show kind of start from that point forward. But from now, we still have all of, like, the lead-up to his complete and utter downfall to get to. So Walt has just killed Gus Fring, and if he was not too big for his britches before, Mr. White is my god, thinks he's on top of the world now.
It kind of is.
I know,
too.
Like, he is. He literally is, and there's not really any way around it. But god, now he's got to cover his tracks in many different ways. He's got to completely cover any connection that he's had to Gus Fring. He's got to cover any connection he had to the ricin that he planted with Brock and hide that from Jesse. God, this leads us to the point where they need to erase what's on that. It's like on a laptop or something, like the evidence locker.
Oh, this gets wild. That's specific. But the whole season is just one thing after another. With the huge magnet, right?
They go right, yeah, yeah, yeah. The big magnet. And then I'm reading a little rundown right here. So it says, back home, Walt tries to forgive Skylar, but the damage has already been done. She's afraid of him. I think this is where she says, like, she's waiting for the cancer to come back. Like, she just wants him to die.
Yeah, what a horrible thing to say, right?
But, like, think of where this is left off. Like, oh my god. This... Because she also knows that he was behind this death, like, this blowing up.
Right, at a certain point, like, you're terrified that this killer exists.
Yeah, and I mean...
Period. And that's what you view him as more and more as you hear.
God, this show is so stressful. Every time I'm back and like thinking about season 5, I'm just like brought back to this state of like extreme unease that existed for me throughout those like 14 episodes or however many, 16 or whatever they were.
Not a enjoyable show in that sense for me. And that's where it's like, it's funny pitching it to people. It's like, oh, it's an incredible show, but it's also horrible.
I know. It literally is like, I know what you mean.
Makes you feel horrible. Yeah, I know. Because it's like, it's not technically horrible either, but the fact that it causes you these like gut-wrenching moments, and you're just like, oh, I just willfully put myself through that, didn't I?
So... This brings me, I guess, to another song, which, again, same kind of themes that we've touched on before, but I think Walt feels this the most acutely at this point. I mean, taking down Gus Fring in the world of meth distribution or drug distribution generally in, like, the southern United States is like, the most... It's, like, highest up on the podium of things that anybody could possibly do. Like, Gus Fring... is untouchable, has been like this untouchable entity, and Walter White is the guy who took him down, which brings us to that scene in the desert where him and Jesse and Mike are trying to Mike wants out of everything. He doesn't want to deal with Walt anymore. He doesn't want to be a part of any of this stuff anymore. And they're trying to sell whatever that stuff is to what's
an
that
called? Interested distributor.
Yeah, the distributor.
Methylethamine.
Yeah, whatever the thing that's used in meth production. And Walter White is like, I'm gonna be your cook, me and Jesse Pinkman here, and you're gonna buy out Mike Ehrmantraut for $5 million or whatever. And then the guy's like, what are you talking about?
He's like, I don't want you.
And then he's like, you know, say my name, you know who I am. And then he says Heisenberg, and our boy Walt goes, you know, you're goddamn right. I don't know that at this point, other than the I am the danger scene, which is like, we get a real uneasiness from Walt in that scene. Like, he is still on edge there, and as much as confident as we know he is about him being the guy with the gun as opposed to running away from it, although clearly was not the case, but at that point in time. But here we get this guy who's totally like, he's like smiling, he's totally relaxed. He thinks he's the Gus Fring now. He's better than Gus Fring. Like, he's completely untouchable. So this brings me to, there were a number of songs we could use here. This was kind of just one of the first ones that came to mind. The Man by The Killers, which we'll play here. So, yeah, I mean, just...
This is better than The Man by Taylor Swift.
Well, it's different theme. Incomparable. really just a song of complete arrogance and that untouchable. I got gas in the tank. I got money in the bank. I got news for you. You're looking at the man. Like, I got skin in the game. I got a household name. I mean, no further explanation needed, I guess, than that. That kind of is the embodiment of that, your Heisenberg, your goddamn right moment for me. So, which really, if we hated Walter White before, which a lot of people didn't and a lot of people never do, but this is the season where I was just like, oh my God. I mean, I wouldn't say I liked Walt in season 4, but in season 5, I'm like praying.
There's always some moment of like temporary, like at least emotion for him. It's like, okay, I feel in this moment, like I get it.
Oh, kinda. Absolutely. And we'll get to that in a second. But at this point in time, he's never more unlikable to me than he is in this frame of time, and him killing Mike and him, you know, this guy is just.
Unbelievable.
Terrible. Terrible. I hate this guy.
I can't even remember, like, he feels like Mike's gonna potentially, like, he thinks that Mike's somehow, like, some danger to him, in that Mike could potentially leak his information if he ever leaves. Is that the idea? That was his justification for killing him?
Well, the justification was that Gus had 9 employees that
right and Mike wanted to
and that yeah. Mike had the names of, they were on Gus's payroll, and that like they'd all been caught when Gus had been tied to all this by the DEA, and Mike refused to give them to Walt because he knew Walt was just gonna kill them, and Mike was like, no, like if we can keep paying them off, like it'll be fine. Like, these are guys that Mike had built a relationship with, which again, if you've seen Better Call Saul, you understand that there was like this entire like length of time, like years before Walter White even came into the picture, where it's just like Mike and Gus building this empire from the ground up. Right. And anyway, so Walt in this like kind of this arrogant, freaked out frenzy shoots Mike, kills him, and then is like instantly like, oh wait, I could have gotten the names from Lydia. And you're like, Jesus. But also,
yeah, the whole thing was
a lot of it too, at least the way that I interpreted that scene, was Mike had told him off and told him like it is, and that upset Mr. Walter White deeply. You know, he said, you and your pride and your ego, like, you destroyed everything.
He called it. Yeah.
And as much as everyone is like, yeah, like, Mike rules when he does that, like, well, obviously does not share those sentiments. So, yeah, he kills him there. And then we get just one of the most difficult scenes to watch. My mom, like, couldn't even watch the scene when I had it on the TV. Where this, it's like a montage where Walt has at this point hired a gang of white supremacists that are in the prisons to kill off these 9 members.
It is a montage, and there's like a song playing too. Can we play that song?
Yeah. We'll play the song. I can't remember what it's called right now, but
so iconic. Or like, I don't even remember the song either. I just remember the song in addition to the scenes being played at the same time was just very unsettling.
Yeah, hold on. Let me find the song. It's Pick Yourself Up by Nat King Cole during the prison massacre.
Right, and so the song is intentionally in contrast with, like, it's kind of an upbeat
song.
Yeah,
it's like a very kind of like relaxed sort of like jazz, a, you know, song. Jazzy, yeah. Little number. And
start all over again. Nothing's impossible. I have found for when my chin is
You haven't.
It is upbeat and happy too.
Yeah, you
listening.
Haven't seen The Godfather, but very Godfather-esque for anyone who has seen it. There's this very iconic scene in The Godfather where Michael Corleone has just orchestrated hits on the main heads of the crime families, the opposing crime families, and it takes place during his niece's or nephew's baptism. And so you have this contrast of this very holy occasion, and he's sitting there on the altar and standing there on the altar because he's his niece's godfather. And meanwhile, he's just orchestrated these brutal, brutal massacres of, like, all these guys in this, like, this religious song is playing in the background, and he's just standing there. And it's just, like, nothing is more chilling than that contrast. So they definitely took a page out of Coppola's book with that one, I'm sure.
That is a theme, regardless of the specific media, of like the nonchalant execution of anyone is so wild.
It's like, and they're like really, really like difficult to watch killings too. There's one where they just like burn the guy alive in the one room. Like they start a fire.
Yeah, they decide to give you visuals of every possible way of offing someone in prison. And they're not shy about showing the camera what's going on.
Yeah, jeez Louise. That's kind of where we've got Walter. Season 5. This is like the middle of season 5. And I think when the show aired, I could be mistaken about this, but it's split up into like season 5A and season 5B, much like Better Call Saul was split into two seasons kind of. And so the final episode of season 5A is the one where they're having, things are kind of all good now, because at this point, Walter has cleaned his hands of the, any connection that he's had to Gus Fring, to Lydia, and all of these operations in Germany, and everything that Gus was doing, and his whole empire, he's completely disconnected himself from it, and he's stepped away from the whole thing. He's given it all up. He's just going to focus on the car wash, and him and Skylar are going to focus on laundering the money that they've made, which is an insane amount of money.
Oh yeah, I forgot that momentary.
Yeah. Sorry,
No, just the fact that he's totally stepped away. And that was a thing for a while. And like, people were calling him, and he was saying no. And that's where you can feel this temporary support for him again. It's like, okay, he did step away. And he does care for his family here. And like, it seems like things are going well. Like, they intentionally make it that much more tricky for the fans. And those are the memories that are that much more significant for those who support him all the way through the show. And the what's the something sin pill? What do you call it? With Brock, what kind of, what was the poison called?
Ricin? Or are you talking about the... Oh, the flower. Oh, no, because right, Jesse right, thought yeah, it was yeah. the Ricin.
It, Ricin. But the point is like, those moments are that much easier to forget, and the family moments are the ones that you hold on to as a Walt supporter.
Right. Yeah, and that even... So, by the end of season, like, 5A, Hank has now discovered that he comes across this book that Gale has given to Walt and discovers that it's been Walter White the whole time. It's been right under his nose, and he puts everything together, and, like, that's the end of, like, the midpoint of season 5.
Oh, man.
And you're just like... Ah, and this whole idea of him giving it up, like Walt giving up the whole thing, makes it even trickier when these two have their confrontation, because he does make the argument to Hank that, like, he's not involved with it anymore, and he's going to die of lung cancer, his cancer's back, and why destroy the family? Why dig up all this old stuff? Because, yeah. You know, he's going to die.
And particularly if you're on Walt's side, like, it all rings true in it one does. Sense. It's like, he's not making a bad argument here.
I know. But Hank can't let it go, and rightfully so. I mean, a lot of it too with Hank is personal, I'm sure. And, you know, this isn't the in-character episode about Hank, but, I mean, the real motivator, I'm sure, being like, and he says to Walt, he's like, I don't know who you are. Like, and then Walt gives him that line back of, if that's true, you don't know who I am, then maybe your best course would be to tread lightly. And you're just like, oh, this guy, what a pain in the butt.
That's the sort of moment, that interaction with anyone that you're particularly close with, like family, would be the sort of thing to leave me like scarred for the rest of my life.
Oh, I know. I'd be like, I wouldn't be able to trust anybody like, after that.
Right. That relationship that's so significant to you, in that person telling you tread lightly, like, basically a direct threat, you're like, okay,
yeah, I know, it's ay, ay, ay.
Next course of action, paranoia. Let's do that, keep that for
so
yeah, very rough.
So yeah, we're back here. We're beginning season 5B, which is, you know, essentially just everything unraveling for Walt, because now the DEA knows it's him, and all that Hank has to do, which is quite the task, is get actual physical evidence that Walt is Heisenberg, which is very difficult to do at this point, because he's completely covered his tracks. So
he's doing a good job. And the way he does this is he seeks out the money in the desert.
Well, yeah, that's the funny part of it. This whole confrontation that exists in the desert, it's because Jesse has led Walt to believe that he's gotten his hands on all the money that Walt has made. He takes pictures of the barrels that he... I mean, they're just replicas of the barrels that Walt ended up using, and he says, like, I've got them. But it's totally, like, the whole thing is fabricated, and he leads them out to these coordinates. And it ends up being one big mess, because then what's his name? Todd and his mm-hmm. whole
posse,
his white supremacist family who orchestrated all the killings and stuff in the prisons. They all end up out there chasing the money, and Hank ends up getting shot, and Gomez gets, and is that his name?
Yep. Gomi.
Okay. Yeah. Ends up getting shot. I know. Cause Hank always calls him Gomi. So I was like, is Gomi his name? But no, it's not. So, one big mess. But the main takeaway, I guess, from this season, or this latter half of the season, is just the complete downfall, the complete downward trajectory. If you think of it that way, because does Walt think of it as a downward trajectory when all is said and done? I don't know, but that's... in these last, like, 10 minutes.
At a certain point, he lost his brother-in-law, which was a major blow.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he lost his family. So this brings us to Walt has now ended up in New Hampshire. He's like, right? Is that the state he ends up in?
That sounds right.
Yeah, he's ended up...
After fleeing.
He's fleed. He's used the disappearing man, as has Saul Goodman. And they've both ended up... he's ended up in the Granite State. And completely separated from his family, who want absolutely nothing to do with him now, rightfully so, because everything has come out. And I mean, there was just a whole kerfuffle that happened with Skyler and with Walt Jr. Like, everybody knows, everybody wants nothing to do with him, but he's living alone now in this like little cabin, completely like isolated from the rest of the world. So there were a lot of songs I had here as particular choices. One of the first that came to mind, hold on, let me find it. I mean, Coldplay's Viva La Vida is sort of, was even when I was watching the show, thematically was like one of these main ones running through my mind as you're watching these scenes of Walt completely alone and has lost everything. We'll play it here.
I've heard this one before. Good stuff.
But yeah, the idea of just the downfall of...
Oh yeah, I just thought about the lyrics for a second.
Right. And now, you know, I used to roll the dice, feel the fear in my enemy's eyes. You know, even the line of like, listen as the crowd would sing, now the old king is dead, long live the king. This, the idea of Gus Fring being the old king, Walt replacing him as the new king. But the cycle repeats itself. The only way that any of this ends for any of these people is in complete, like, you're gonna get caught, essentially. Like, it's that's the only thing that can happen. So the downfall of it all is a big one. Also coming to mind is so the one that also came to mind for me was this song aptly titled I Lost Everything by a personal favorite of mine, Mr. Sam Cooke, which basically, well, we'll play it here.
I lost everything when I lost you.
It's this melancholy little tune, and
I keep thinking Sam Cooke is like Sam Smith. I'm like, I can't believe, I don't normally think of you listening to this type of music, but it's a different person.
Yeah, so that sense. different person, not even remotely close at all. the lyrics are just like, you know, I lost everything when I lost you. Now my heart is breaking in two, yada, yada, yada. I mean, the natural kind of straightforward and presumably original intention behind this song is talking about a lover that had come and gone, but which can be aptly applied to Walt and his situation with his family and, you know, how much despair he is in now that they're gone, which when I watch the show is why I really feel for Walt personally, is like his complete disconnection from the world and particularly from his family who now hate him. But with Walt, I think the real sense of despair is how he doesn't have his chemistry anymore, his meth production, this thing that he holds, the science that he holds closer than anything else. Like, he can't do it. And I think that's really what he misses above all else. And that's not to say, I truly believe that he, like, in you know, the optimistic side of me, that he loves Skyler, like, he loves his kids.
I wouldn't even think that's a stretch, though. Like, the fact that he tries to reach out to them, and, like, he wants contact. Like, he clearly... he has his emotions for them.
But he loves his meth more. Well, not the meth. He loves the chemistry more. He loves the you know, he says, I did it for me.
Well, he loves the science of making money and power. Absolutely. Too, I think is what the chemistry.
It's his ego. So, that was a big one for me as I was reminiscing on these terrible, terrible. Those are some of the hardest, like, scenes for me to watch. Even the first time around, like, oh, I hate watching somebody totally isolated. And like, that was the only time in season 5 that I actually felt bad for Walter White. was like, God, that's horrible. But then I'm like, oh, but he's horrible. So I was really conflicted.
Right. That's what happens. Horrible things usually are connected to horrible people.
Yeah.
Die by the sword, you live by the sword. That's what you say.
I also thought of another song, which kind of is on like a different side of the coin, but not exactly. Show No Regret by Daniel Caesar. It's the lyrics. Well, we'll play it here.
What cost? What am I giving?
But at what cost? What am I giving up? At what cost? I always find myself here. Give up the fight. You're not a winner. Move toward the light. Yada 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 yada. I mean, pretty straightforward and simple, but the point stands of like, I mean, never forget it's what you asked for. Show no regret is kind of it's the first line, and for mm-hmm. everything, I don't think. I mean, even the final scene, which we'll touch on in a second, you get the sense that if Walter White did it all again, had to do it all again, he would, like. I don't think he actually regrets anything, but he laments nonetheless the sadness that has been.
Well, the things that would be done different weren't him. It's like other people right. didn't do what they were supposed to do. Like Hank right. shouldn't have found the diary. Yeah. Why did he have to do that?
And and that's his ego, just completely delusional and out of touch. Like, there's no version of this where he gets to live happily ever after, because that's just not the way.
Well, that's where it makes it easier as an audience member to write him off even more so. It's like, watching someone truly, like, repent and regret the things they've done makes it that much easier to, like, accept them and, like, support them again. But he doesn't, so you're like, okay, this guy is actually just
right.
irredeemable, it feels like.
So yeah, that brings us to kind of this series finale. This infamous kind of, there's two kind of really famous scenes. There's one that he has with Skylar, where he goes back to she's living in a different house now, but he goes to their house and he says, you know, I did it for me. I liked it. I was good at it. And that's the first time he's ever admitted that to himself, to her, that this wasn't, you know, for family or for any of these things that he'd always claimed it was about. This was about ego. This was about power. This was about feeling like he was on top of the world, and he was willing to give up everything for that. So quite a significant moment. And then also that final scene where he kills all the white supremacists that have enslaved Jesse to make meth, which, by the way, he gave the okay for, you know, a year ago or however long. So I was like, oh my God, Jesse's like enslaved by these psychopaths for like a year, which is, I don't even want to think about that. So I'm not going to. He kills all of them. He frees Jesse. Jesse has his glorious kind of, but it's almost like bittersweet because he's just been through like literally hell on earth. He drives away, and Walt has been has been ironically shot by a device of his own making, and he dies as the cops charge in, but there's a little smile on his face as the final song, Baby Blue by Badfinger, plays, which we'll play here as well. Yeah, the significance of this song obviously is, Baby Blue, the meth that he produces is Baby Blue, so there's this very tongue-in-cheek kind of thing that the song is referring to, and,
he's also sad.
You know, but Guess I Got What I Deserved is the very first line of the song, as he's, you know, walking around, like, lovingly caressing all of the equipment that's in there, you know, these tanks and the gas masks and everything, and he's really reflecting back on everything that this show has been. And right before, you know, he kicks the bucket and, you know, does his little smile up as the camera kind of pans out. So there's that. And in that final songs of Walter White that I have to bring forward, that I also felt were apt, although I don't think anything could have been different. I think they perfectly nailed the song choice and everything in the finale, but what I also felt are apt choices in this kind of trajectory that Walter White has been on, and this final scene and the significance of that for the show in a more broad sense. David Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World kind of seems very well suited to Walter White's situation. But yeah, the lyrics of, you know, I thought you died alone a long, long time ago. I never lost control. You're face to face with the man who sold the world. Anyway, the idea of like, I mean, Walter White really is the man who sold the world. I think that this particular song is like about sacrificing everything for money. I don't actually know the original kind of, it's got some capitalistic indictment of, you know, the world or whatever, but which does apply to Walter White still, but more for ego and for power did he sell his world than for money, although he did for money as well. And then also, given Baby Blue is the final song in the actual show, when I think Baby Blue, the first song that comes to my mind is It's All Over Now, Baby Blue by Bob Dylan. This is one of my favorite songs ever. And this is like about a breakup, if I had to really guess, but it could be about anything. The idea of just...
Oh, yeah, I know this song.
Yeah, it's on the 70s.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of interchangeable with Baby Blue. I mean, I think Bad Fingers is probably more lyrically well-suited, but nonetheless, something significant ending. It's all over now, Baby Blue, being the repeated refrain.
And it's all over now, Baby Blue. The highway is for gambling.
You know, the carpet is moving under you, like these what is it called? Like this imagery of just significant things coming to their, meeting their demise. You know, always reminds me, ever since I've watched Breaking Bad, and I, you know, have been listening to this song before I watched Breaking Bad, but ever since old Walter White met his end with his own Baby Blue, at the hands of his own Baby Blue, I think about him every time I listen to this song. So, yeah, those are all my Walter White songs. Do you have any? Good like, stuff. I feel like I talked that entire time.
You know, sometimes in this world, you're called to talk. Sometimes you're called to listen, you know?
Right. Fair enough. Just wanted to make sure you had the opportunity to put your thoughts forward, should you have had any, but you did not, so. But yeah, I mean, in terms of those song choices, do you feel that any of those are more significant?
I think the word blue, besides the color of the meth, it could potentially be representing just like the fact that he's sad, is what I said earlier. Like the type of music he's sad.
Yeah, but I don't think he is, though.
No.
I mean, when Baby Blue...
I would say, if anything, it'd be bittersweet.
I think it's. Is bittersweet. I mean, he's dying.
It's like he doesn't want the situation to happen, but if it's going to happen, the fact that all his enemies, he's been able to avenge himself and get some sort of perceived justice in his eyes.
Well,
But at the end of the day, he's dead and his family moves on without him. So that's sad.
I think he'd rather die the way he died than have gone to prison at all.
Right. It's like the best way his story as it currently was could have unfolded. Like, he doesn't want to live with himself either.
Right. I mean, he clearly, something changes within him as in that year that he spends up and isolated in that cabin in New Hampshire. Like, he has this kind of epiphany that he has to fix if he can fix anything, he has to go and try and fix what he can, what's in his control at this point in time, and find a way to give that money to his family now that he'll be gone. I mean, he anticipates he's going to die in this encounter with all of these people, with Jesse, he wants Jesse to be the one who kills him, and Jesse won't do it because, he says, do it yourself. I don't know that it is sad. I mean, there's, I think, some sad connotations to, the point stands of why did the producers and writers make the meth blue in the first place? Like, what was the significance of that? Which is a good question. I mean, blue does have the particular connotations of sadness, but also, and It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, that is definitely supposed to raise some sad ideals and imagery in that. But that's a good question. Is he sad at all?
They call it Blue Sky.
Yeah, I think it's kind of more like that. I think this is Walter White is at his absolute happiest in that final scene. I mean, he died again. He died doing what he loved, which is he died in a science lab, which is also significant. He dies in something that he believes to be probably the only good thing that he's done in the past 2 years.
He was doing something.
Yeah, I think
honorable.
In his mind, this is an honorable situation. He dies rather than going to prison, which is something that he would definitely prefer, given he's also going to die anyway. The cancer has come back and, he's an unhealthy individual. I think this is where everything kind of comes to a head for him. This is Walter White in ecstasy, but that's just my own two cents. I don't know. I certainly was sad after watching this. I was very sad, and you can attest to that. I was in absolute despair for probably a week after the fact. And even when I think about it now, the entire show and the repercussions morally and philosophically that it's had on my personal life, as I've had to think through even just how the audiences have reacted to Walter White as a character and what that means about people's behavior and generally
watching the show. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you can say it.
No, I was going to say, I think people side with Walter White because they wish, a lot of people, it's kind of like a wish fulfillment thing with them. Although I think most people will recognize that he did some nasty things. There are a lot of people out there who the only reason they don't break the law or do terrible things is because they would get caught.
Right. The hardest part about watching Breaking Bad and stepping away from it is realizing that he's not perceived as an evil character to most people, or not maybe most people, but to a significant enough minority that at the end, when all said and done, like, the takeaway is, wow, what a legacy, what a powerful character,
right.
Not what a horrible situation. And like,
right.
the fact that there's real world consequences and ramifications to this sort of story being brought to the public's attention, and like how that affects how you even perceive people is much more disheartening than just the temporary like sadness when you see a character you like or at one point liked do horrible things and then die.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, you already feel that bittersweet kind of grief when any show ends. There's an extra layer to it when the show is as dramatic and uneasy and tragic as something like Breaking Bad is. I mean, Breaking Bad is this kind of Shakespearean or Greek tragedy from beginning to end, but there's an added layer, like you're saying, of the repercussions of what that means, you know, applied practically to the real world, which is all of that combined really left me so devastated after this show, and devastated every time I think about it. And I think these last few song choices really reflect that. Yeah, Walter White, I hate your guts. That's all I'm going to say.
No.
No.
Well, can't leave them all feeling good and joyful. Even if Walter did, we might feel a little bit baby blue. Thank you all so much for watching.
We
listening.